Welcome everybody to the January 23rd, 2024 Behind Our Eyes book launch. We're pleased to have Jo Elizabeth Pinto with us tonight, and she's going to be talking with me, Annie Cepeda, about her new novel called Braided Love. But before I get to Jo Elizabeth, I have a special announcement. We recently, the book launch committee, Zoom committee, had an idea that was brought to us by Alice Massa about doing a best of the Behind Our Eyes book launches for 2022 and 2023. So we set up the voting and we sent out an email to get the Behind Our Eyes members ready through the Writers Party line to be able to vote on the recordings of the last 2 years of book launches. We listed the authors and the titles of their books, and we gave a little short of a week for people to send in their votes to a secure email. And also I received some texts and voice messages myself. So we did post the totals on the Writers Party line. Some people got some votes, but about between 5 and 7 people were provided, somebody voting for them. But the winners were definitely, for 2022, Sally Rosenthal with her book of poetry, Peonies in Winter. And the 2023 winner is here, and it is Deanna Quietwater Noriega for her book, Dogwood Blossom, Growing Up Native American. So I wanted to just say, woohoo!
Yay!
And we're so proud of you, and congratulations. Deanna, would you like to say anything quickly before we move on? And I'm not sure no. Sally is here.
I haven't seen her come in yet.
See her come in yet. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. Thank you. If you voted for me, thank you. If you didn't vote for me, but you voted because we want this to be kind of just a fun thing to do for our writers who stand up in front of you and tell you about their books, because we do it as a practice, preparing for when we have to do podcasts and different opportunities to promote our book. And we do it this way so that we have a kind of a safe environment. And if you flub it, you've learned from your mistakes, but it's just a kind of another benefit of being a member to get a chance to practice how you would present.
That's right. Well, thank you for that, Deanna. And Deanna is also one of our co-hosts tonight, along with Abby Taylor. And we're going to get started. So I'm going to read a little bit about Jo's book, and then I think we'll just dive right in. Summer on the ranch seems safe and predictable for Brenda. All she has on her mind are trips into town with Nick Haynes and the horsehair rope she's braiding so she can start training her Morgan Colt tenacity. Then Kathy arrives from the city with a troubled past and an uncertain future, as Kathy adjusts to life in the country. Both girls begin to figure out what family bonds really mean to them in a world that isn't as simple as it appears. Hello, Jo Elizabeth. How are you this evening?
Hi, I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great. I would like to see if you can tell a little bit of our listeners about you. I know most of our listeners here do know you, but just tell me a little bit about who you are. Maybe where you live, how your writing is, and what you do for a living, those kinds of things.
I live in Colorado, a little bit north of Denver, in what used to be a farming community. It is not anymore. It is a small city now. And I have, this is my fifth book, but I also work as a Braille proofreader and now an editor of other people's books. So I'm putting in a shameless plug. Keep that in mind if you ever need anybody. I don't know what else you want to know.
I guess, whatever else you want to tell us, maybe it'll come out later. I'm very interested, though, in your progression of Braille proofreading. Maybe does that really help you in your personal writing, or are the two very separate?
It helps me in the editing process, I guess. But as far as writing, they're pretty separate because proofreading is very analytical. It's a separate brain space. So it's very comma and period and capital letters. And it's a separate brain space from writing. Writing is creative, and it's what I do when I'm not working. It's a fun thing. I love it. And proofreading keeps the bills paid. It's what I do to support my writing habit.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And it's probably what a writing is what I would do if I could. I would probably stop proofreading and write, but that's not going to happen anytime soon.
I wish it were different for a lot of us, right? Right. If we could make all of that money just with our creativity.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
But we work our day jobs, a lot of us, to write.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So before I get into like the questions, you want to tell me about your other books and you know, maybe a little bit about them and, you know, where in your life as a writer you were when you wrote those books?
Well, I published my first novel in 2015, and that novel was sort of a lifelong thing. I started writing that book when I was in high school, and I just kept picking at it and picking it up and putting it down and kept working on it through many years. And this one, actually, the very early drafts of the first part of the story I wrote that same year in high school, but then I stuffed it away in a notebook that was in my garage and forgot about it.
You know, you're talking about Braided Love?
Braided Love, yes. Mm-hmm. And then I found it last summer when I was poking around and thought, I wonder if I could do something with this. But it wasn't the whole story. It was just part of it. So I expanded on it.
Now, your first book was Brighter Side of Darkness? Was that your first book? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how did that... So you said it was a lifelong, like a span of 10, 15 years?
Oh, a span of 30 years almost. I wrote the first part of it when I was a junior or senior in high school. And then I...
Wow.
Put it down for a number of probably 10 years, or maybe not quite that long. I don't remember. Many years, though.
Right.
And then I picked it up and showed and messed. I was learning how to use the computer. And so I edited it and played around with it. And it was actually a little bad. It was very amateurish. And I thought, wow, I got an A on this.
Yeah.
And so I cleaned it up, and I was learning how to use a word processor, and I cut and pasted and moved things around and did all the word processor stuff, and it got better. And so I showed it to my husband at the time, and he said, "You can't leave it like that. What happens next?"
Yeah, good for him.
And so I thought, well, what if? What else could I do with this? And so I played with it and started writing on it some more, and it turned into a novel over the years. And I picked it up and put it down, and, you know, life happens. And so it took until 2015, which this was in the 90s, that he told me to keep working on it. And so years passed. And then my mom died of cancer in 2015, very suddenly. And I realized, you know, we don't know how long we have. And so I got busy, and I had tried to get an agent and this and that and the other, and tried the regular publishing route. And I realized I don't have time to play with this. I'm going to do it myself. And I liked the process because I had control of the cover and the marketing and all of the stuff. And I liked it that way because I didn't have anybody pulling strings for me.
Right.
So independent publishing, it's great.
Yes.
You have to do a lot of the work.
Right.
Of it,
but you have all the control.
But you have all the control, and I loved it. So I stuck with it, and I published a couple of memoirs, a parenting memoir and a gratitude memoir over the next few years, and a book of poetry. And then here we are with my next young adult novel, because I've just really enjoyed the whole independent process. Selling where I want to and marketing how I want to and doing the covers the way I want them and not having anybody telling me, oh, you have to do this or that, or put in what we want in the book,
or take out,
what, take we out what we don't want in the book, or whatever it is. I just enjoy that whole process.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think I went through a similar process as you. I had, a life-changing event, my mother's death, and then I got my first poetry book done. So it's really amazing and kind of a, that whole level of, our mortality plays into doing your book. It's like, oh yeah, I don't have much time left. I better get this done. And independent publishing, that sounds like the way I want to go.
Right. Oh, being blind, I don't know if I like to say it that way, but it's an eye-opening thing when you realize, we don't know, because I was only in my 40s, but who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
That's right. We don't know. And I'm so glad you made that decision, because you're a wonderful writer and you have that sensitivity in you to connect with young people and have a very wonderful perspective on younger people and what they might think or how they might act. And I really applaud you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Let me go on to this question. So did you write this for yourself, or did you write it being inspired by somebody else's writing? What was the inspiration for this book, Braided Love?
I had a friend in high school who was adopted, and so it's not her story, but I knew she was having some feelings about it. And so I sort of had her in mind, but the story is completely different. And then I knew some kids who were in foster care. And so some of that is reflected in that. I mentored a lot of kids who didn't have the best home lives.
And so those were foster kids?
Some of them were foster kids, and some of them were just kids who were at loose ends.
Right.
So some of that goes to that issue. And then some of it, a little bit of it was my own being at loose ends. And some of it is that I believe that we need more books with disabled characters. So some of it is that story.
Right. That's your character, Terry, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Terry and Bo, really.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Although his is not openly, sort of a background thing.
Bo is a wonderful balance of all those things you just talked about, and I don't want to spoil it.
Well, he's more of a, I don't want to put spoilers in there either, but there has to be a sanity, a point of sanity in the middle of chaos.
Wonderfully complex characters, very right. rich characters.
But he has his own. He has his own darkness that he dealt with too. So
sure,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, everybody yeah. does. Nobody is all one thing or all another.
Yeah.
You know, we all have our own redemption.
Yeah, that was actually my next question. You know, why is this message of redemption and acceptance, you know, a theme of a lot of your writing? I mean, you explained some of it just now with what you just said. Why is it important to you? What?
We all are going to need second chances sooner or later if we live long enough. That's a big thing because it's if it hasn't been a theme for you in your life, then you're probably haven't reached single. You're still in your single digits.
Do you mean a sense of forgiveness also when you
yes.
when you yeah, you're forgiving you know yourself and others. I you mm-hmm. know I yeah a theme of self acceptance.
Right, self acceptance yeah. and this book is really about how family is not necessarily the people you were born to.
Yes. And there's you know, it's messy in places. I'm not going to say which places or whatever, because I don't want to, but it's messy and it's contentious sometimes, your book. Some of, you know, the way the characters deal with their own struggles, their own personal, you call them darknesses. You know, I thought it was very well done the way you extrapolated like their individual struggles and then kind of put them all together to figure it out.
Right.
I thought that was brilliant. I loved it.
Well,
you know,
there was somebody said in one book that I read about writing, and I wish I could remember, some Southern person, you know, Olive somebody, and I that's not a good enough thing that you could go look it up. But she said,
okay.
You get your characters into trouble and then you spend the rest of the book getting them out.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that because it's one of the best pieces of writing advice I ever got.
Yeah. Yeah, I could totally understand that. Well, that's what makes a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got to have something in there that, you know, that makes people want to keep reading.
Right.
Yeah. Are you going to write about more people with disabilities in anything in the future?
I hope that if I ever write a book again, that there will always be some character that has a disability in it, but I don't necessarily want that to be what the book is about.
Right.
I just think we need characters with disabilities to appear in books that are not necessarily about them.
Yes. So that's just part of who they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Because when they appear in books, it's usually a story about this character who has a disability of overcoming something or other, or it's got to be all about that character, and that's not necessarily what we need. We just need it to be a normal part of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you there. And it's difficult, I think, as a writer with a disability to balance that. I mean, at least for me personally, a couple of the short stories and stuff that I've written, I've found myself questioning, like, is this too much about it? Is this too little about it? How do I normalize it in the sense of the story? Did you struggle with that at all with Terry or Beau's characters, or was it easy to do?
I struggled not so much with Terry. That was easy enough because he just was who he was and he didn't change. Beau's was a little more complicated because his was a little harder, and I'm not even sure exactly why. His was because I didn't want to make him into a trope, into the guardian angel, so to speak.
Right.
I got criticized somewhat on my last book. I don't know if you read that book, but for making one of the characters into the guardian angel. And I didn't want to fall into that trap. And maybe I did, I don't know. But I did my best not to make him the solver of problems.
Yeah, no, I don't think you did at all. I think the complexity of Bo's character and his history really pushed away from that. So I think that was a good way for you to contend with that person, whoever that was, that criticism. You know.
You can't please everybody though, so you know.
Nope, you can't. Yep. All right. So you mentioned how long this book took from start to finish. What was the most difficult part of the book itself, writing the book?
This book was a bit fragmented for me.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, I'm on Zoom, Sarah. No, go for it. Sorry. I didn't know where the story was going to go. And so it was a bit, I've never written a book like this that was told from different points of view. And so I wanted to make sure I was doing okay telling it from different people's points of view. And so that was a little bit difficult. And then the characters were so different and they were feuding with each other. And that was a little hard for me because I'm not a conflict person. And so,
interesting.
I was like, okay, come on, let's get
you
this
played
over.
It all out on paper.
But I did, but I was like, come on, let's get along with each other. Do you really have to do this?
Oh wow. So it sounds to me like you have this element in your writing where your characters become themselves and you're just kind of pulled along.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, I've always been like that. They do what they want to do. I just write it down.
Yeah, well, you're not the only one that has that. It's kind of bizarre sometimes.
It is.
It's like, I have to go. My husband is like, you're weird. And I'm like, why? He's because I have to be in a certain headspace, you know, for certain characters.
Right.
And then I have to, you know, I have to say, don't bother me. I don't want to get out of this headspace.
Yes.
And he's like, whatever. Just shut your door.
Well, it makes it hard because I have other people who live with me and I have the other people who depend on me for things like sustenance and, you know.
Right. So how do you put aside the dependability piece of being, you know, a mom and a wife and a caregiver? And then you have to, is it hard to switch over sometimes? I know for me it is.
It is, which is part of why I haven't written a novel in a long time, because well, now she's almost 16. She can, you know, get her own dinner if she needs to. But for a long time, she was small.
Right.
And I just didn't let myself get into that headspace because I didn't want to be dragged out of it all the time. I just, it was too hard. So I wrote nonfiction type books where I could leave that place if I needed to.
So it was easier.
It was easier.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting to me. I agree with you there too. Like the novel writing is so absorbing.
Right.
Sometimes it's really hard to break away, or if you don't have enough time to dedicate to it, it's just not the same. And
it was
you just
just
feel
not, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it when she was a smaller child because I would just start to ease into that and then have to, it would be time to go to school and for the afternoon, or it would be time to fix lunch or something. And it was just too hard. So I waited until she was old enough that I didn't need to be there quite so much.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm going to ask you one more question, and then we're going to open it up. But I wanted to ask you if you have beta readers, or you have key people in your life that help you, as critiquing or give you feedback or anything like that. Do you use anybody regularly, or do you kind of just wing it as you need it?
I'm part of a local writers group, so that helped. And then I do have a few trusted people that I let read things. And then for this one, I had a friend who was adopted, so I let her check specifically for that part of stuff. And I had a friend who knew about sign language and that sort of thing, so I checked with her. So I had some kind of specialty people.
Yeah, sure. Like sensitivity readers. Or research, well-informed people specializing. And that's wonderful. I guess it really enhanced, for me as a reader. I really felt like I could understand, the way that Terry communicated, the way you wrote about how he communicated. And that was just wonderfully done. I do have to say that I was just like, I was like, oh, I'm so proud. Yeah, I get it. It was great.
I'm glad that resonated.
It did resonate very, very much. All right. So we're going to open up to questions. Since we're a fairly intimate group, I guess you can unmute who, if you want to ask Gerald a question, you can unmute yourself and then just say your name. Maybe we'll let Deanna and Abby just hang back a little bit and see how we do. How does that sound?
Well, since no one else has started, this is Alice.
All right.
No, Elizabeth, and I will ask you a question. First of all, I will say that I greatly enjoyed reading your book. I thought I was going to read it just at not one sitting because I was doing things in the kitchen, but I really thought that afternoon I would read the whole thing because I became so engrossed in the book. But I finished it on Sunday, and I was so pleased that it was so immediately available, accessible to us to read via Kindle and over the Echo Dot. And I really appreciate that. And the only thing is, reading it that way, those books tend to not have some of those preliminary pages, which I always enjoy.
Right.
The dedication, the acknowledgments, and
I don't know why they do that.
I have an idea though how to get around that, but anyway, for another time and topic and place. But I wondered if you wanted to say if you did dedicate your book to someone and who that is. And my other question, to my knowledge, this is your first book that you've written with multiple points of view, but you identified at the onset of each chapter who the point of view was, which I always really appreciate in these types of novels that are written this way in these contemporary times. So what brought you to doing the multiple point of view for your novel?
Actually, I had started just writing it in Brenda's point of view, and then they had started asking me why the other girl, Kathy, had been placed there. And I thought, you know, the only way I can do that is to write part of it in her point of view, to tell that part of the story, why she had been placed in this particular home. And then as I kept writing, I started to realize that this is as much her story as it is the other girl's story. And so it just kind of evolved that way. And then the story just sort of, the way it mapped itself out, it had to be told. Characters do what they want to do. And I usually write mostly from the first person point of view, but there were things that had to happen that people had to overhear and see, that not, it couldn't all happen from one person or two people's point of view. So it just worked itself out that way. And then it was a suggestion of one of my beta readers to put the names at the beginning of it. I wasn't going to do that, but she said, oh, it would be so much easier. This is what all the people do now. Because I hadn't known that, because I don't read that way, with sighted, the way sighted people read. And she said, oh, they all put the names at the beginning now so that you can tell exactly. And I said, well, can't you tell from the writing? And she said, yes, but it takes you a few sentences. Sometimes you get confused. And so this is what they do these days. Okay.
Yes, I've read a number of novels and the multiple point of view, and most of them that I've read do have the name or some identifying phrase or label there so that one knows whose point of view that particular.
Right. It makes sense. I just.
But you handled it very well. I thought the way you set up the chapters and so forth, I just thought you did a very good job with that multiple point of view, which I think sometimes is not that easy for some writers.
Right. Well, I hadn't planned on doing it that way, but it just sort of worked itself out. Sometimes the best laid plans.
And then did you dedicate the book to someone?
Well, I dedicated it to families and their incredible diversity. I didn't dedicate it to one particular person.
Nice. That's very appropriate for your story and your novel. Yeah, that's good. Thank you, Jo Elizabeth.
Miss Diane, I have a question.
Hi.
First of all, I'm so impressed that you manage these multiple point of views. I'm working on it's my third attempt of a novel, but this one is really I'm going to finish it. And it's great.
Oh, that's great.
It has a single first person point of view. And, you know, it's a lot to manage that. So my question to you is, how did you manage multiple points of view and, you know, following these, you know, all the character arcs and the plot moving forward and all these things happening? And it feels a bit chaotic to me, just structurally. Like, did you use something to sort of map it out or outline it ahead of time? Or like, how did you just manage keeping track of where everybody is at particular points? Or you just go back and reread their last chapter and then, you know, how did you do that? I don't know.
Well, my favorite way to write is still one particular person's first person point of view, because then nothing gets to be there except what is in that person's head and what he or she hears and sees and touches. So it's easier to keep track.
Right. Exactly.
but I just stayed, if I had one chapter of one person's point of view, then I just had to stay with that person and keep it for that amount of time with that one person's point of view. So it was pretty much like, okay, everybody else off stage.
Okay. So you're sort of just moving forward with your plot and then kind of cycling through the different characters
right
along the plot line?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So the plot goes forward. We're going to do this next step. And
yeah.
so-and-so is in charge and everybody else out of the pool.
Right, right. That's still a lot to really track all the details of each character, because I know I have a lot of characters and I still have to track that without it being their point of view.
Right. And I made mistakes. A beta reader caught where I was in the wrong point of view, and she had to say, no, wait a minute. Kathy is the one talking, so you can't put Kathy left because she's I right now. So you
exactly.
can't put, so I made a mistake that almost got through.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in the wrong point of view.
Oh,
catching yeah.
Things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm very impressed with it, and I confess I have not yet read your book, but now I'm wanting to. So I'm glad I called in, and
well,
thank
glad
you
for you did
doing
too.
This.
And keep at it with your novel. I'm
yeah,
excited for you.
Thanks. I started it at NaNoWriMo. So. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never tried that. I don't know if I could keep up with that.
Yeah, it's been in my head for a couple of years, so it's not, you know, yeah.
Well,
but
keep
anyway,
at it.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for coming today.
Mm-hmm. This is Lisa. I just want to know more about your self-publishing process, because I'm probably going to go that route. So could you just describe a little more how that worked?
Well, when you're done writing and you have edited and then gotten someone else to edit, because you don't want to rely on yourself, believe me, even as a proofreader, I don't rely on myself. Then you get a cover. I've got different places that I get covers from, because publishers usually do the covers, but since you're self-publishing, you have to worry about that. But once you have all of that, then what I did is went with Amazon, because it's called print on demand, so you don't have to pay for a bunch of books, which is the wonderful part of Amazon.
Is it accessible? Is Amazon accessible to publish a book?
Barely, but I usually get a sighted person to spend the day with me and work through it, because I wouldn't say it's completely accessible, maybe someday. But I have done it for, we have a writing group, so I help them and they help me, but I have paid for my covers. And I have paid in various things like banana bread and editing and different things for people to help me with publishing. Now, you can also, I pay for my poetry book, I paid some money. I think I paid $100, maybe $200, I don't remember, for them to just do it, because I didn't have someone at the time. So there are ways. Two Pentacles is a place that works with people who are disabled. I think, Leonor, don't the Dvorkins do that
yes.
too?
Yes, DLD Books.
So there are ways. There are companies out there that can help with the Amazon part of it. And then what I do is order the number of... I sell online and with Kindle, and I'm working on the audio. But a lot of what I do too is go to places and sell my books. Like I'm going to the Superstars Writing Conference in February, and I'll sell books there. And then I go to local events. I'm doing a poetry event in a couple days at a library, and I may take some books there. So a lot of my sales are in person. But what you do when you do self-publishing is you take care of your own marketing. And honestly, if you get a publisher, you take care of your own marketing as well, unless you're a big name person like Stephen King or John Grisham or somebody like that.
Yeah.
So there isn't much difference between getting a publisher and self-publishing, except that you have all the control of your own stuff if you self-publish.
What about copyright?
What about it?
Is the book copyrighted? Or
yes.
Yes.
Yes, it's copyrighted.
So it automatically gets copyrighted through Amazon, or do you have to?
It's copyrighted right now. Your stuff is already copyrighted just because you wrote it. Mm-hmm. But it's copyrighted. You'll get your own ISBN number on Amazon.
Yeah, okay.
But work is copyrighted just because you created it, and you could, if you are worried about that, put a copy of it in an envelope, seal it, and mail it to yourself. And that is proof of the copyright date right there. But I don't bother with that because there's so much out there that it's not, nobody's going to mess with it. So, but it's copyrighted. Right. You'll get an ISBN number when you publish your book.
Okay, thanks.
It's Diane. I can ask another question unless someone else wants to go. Please jump ahead. No one? Okay, so yeah, thanks again for doing this. Back to the book. I'm wondering, kind of, is there sort of a final message or final question that you sort of want your readers to ponder and consider after reading your book? Like, is there, you know, what are they kind of left with? Or
I would hope that they're left with the idea that keep coming back, you know, keep mm-hmm. trying, forgiveness. And mm-hmm. also that family is the people who care about you. Mm-hmm. And that can be the people who you were born to, or it can be the people who love you,
mm-hmm.
no matter who they are. But it's the people that are there for you.
Okay. That's lovely. Thank you. And hi, Susan Glass. It's Diane Landy.
So, Joe Elizabeth, this is Annie. So have you had any negative experiences being an independent author, or any times where you have, wanted to just, I don't know, look into traditional publishing again?
Sometimes it's hard because, like, some libraries will not even look at independently published books. So I have tried to get my book into, like, my local libraries, and they have basically told me, look, anybody can publish a book. So we don't look at independently published books because we don't think they're as good of quality as traditionally published books, because anybody can slap anything up on Amazon, which is true. Anybody can put anything up on Amazon.
Yes, it's true in some instances, but I think we've proven here, you know, with the book launches we've done, and the people, including you and a couple of people here that are that have called in, that we have quality books.
Right.
And it's just, you think that that type of attitude will ease up eventually?
I don't know, because I've seen some wonderful books put up on Amazon, and I've seen some atrocious books put up on Amazon. So yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I agree with you there. We could have a whole nother call about independent book publishing and Ingram Spark.
Right, right.
All that stuff. I mean, there's so much about it. It's, you know, there's so many layers. Do you have hardcover books, or are your books soft covered through Amazon?
There's I didn't do the hardcover because I don't. Most people are not willing to pay that much money, from what I've found. So I just haven't gone that route. I've done the Audible thing because a lot of people will pay for books because they like to listen while they're driving, or different things. I did not make my poetry book into an Audible because it's hard to make your money back on poetry.
Yeah, that's true. Poetry doesn't sell as well unless you're, of course, somebody like Mary Oliver.
Right, right. And I don't know. Now that I've found that you can read your book on Kindle, I don't know. I'm going to make this one into an Audible, I think, because there's something magic about hearing your book.
Yeah. So I do you re-listen to your books?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I do too. I'm like, oh, I'm feeling really down. Let me listen to one of my books.
Right. Wait, wow.
Oh, this is Asia.
Yes, Asia.
I have a question.
Sure.
Joe. I have two questions. Are all of your books under the Joe E. Pinto moniker?
No, actually, just my first one is, because I didn't think Elizabeth sounded very good for the male narrator. And now I almost wish I had just put it under my name because it gets confusing. So they're under Joe Elizabeth Pinto.
Okay. And then my second question is, are your books available on Bookshare?
My first one is. The other ones, I don't know how to. I'm not a member of Bookshare, and I've tried to submit them, and they never appear. So I don't know how to get them to end up on Bookshare. I would love them to be there, but
I do a lot of requests of books for school, and you have to fill out their book request form, and that will allow them to be able to get your book.
Maybe I haven't done that, or I know.
You will need the title, the author, the publisher, the publish year, the ISBN number, and then you got to answer a question or two.
Maybe someone who isn't the author needs to fill it.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah, I was going to say Abby.
Yes, because I have all my books are up on their Bookshare, and all you do is you go to bookshare.org. And I can never remember. I think you have to click on something like contribute or something like that. And then you have to fill out it gives you a letter of consent form. You download that, you fill it out, you mail it in, and then you send them your book, but it needs to be in an EPUB format. That's the way to do it.
Oh, I wonder if mine is not the right, because how do you get it into that?
Well, see, that's the nice thing about publishing with DLD. My last two books, they were able to put them in EPUB and send them to me. Unless you have a program that can convert things to EPUB, I don't know what to tell you.
Well,
I have one question.
You could look, because they might take it in another format. And then you can also contact
it in a PDF.
They have a contact page. So you can contact them.
I'll look into it.
Yeah.
I have one other question.
Okay.
I personally love poetry. What is the what is your author's name for the poetry book?
It's under Joe Elizabeth Pinto. It's called Dancing with the Seasons, Year in Simple Verse. You can find it on my website is brightsideauthor.com.
Okay, awesome.
Like, you know, looking on the bright side?
Yes.
And you can find it there. Or on Amazon, but it's easier to just go to brightsideauthor.com and it will take you to the Amazon page.
Fantastic. I'll look that up. I've written a few poems myself. Not enough to put into a book.
Well, keep writing, maybe someday.
When I really get in the mood, I was very, very iffy about a project I had to do for a few semesters ago for a history class. We had to read this book and give either our artistic interpretation or an academic essay.
Oh,
I do not like academic essays. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do a poem. And I don't know what it is up with my brain, but I need a full story to complete a good poem. So I read the entire book. I got a poem that was close to 3 pages long and a half wow. hour.
Oh my.
Yeah. And I got the best compliment I think you could ever get with a poem is when I turned it in and I got a comment back from the professor. She said, "This is absolutely wonderful. It gave me chills."
Oh.
I'm like, it must have been a good poem. Mm-hmm.
Marlene has her hand up.
Marlene has her hand up. Yep. Maybe we should go to her.
Yep.
Marlene, go ahead.
Thank you. Sorry, I forgot about the hand.
Anyway. No worries. Well, it's hard to get a word in edgewise sometimes. So go ahead.
So Elizabeth, your Apples of Gold, which is poetry, is on Audible. And because I have it and I have your 60 books.
But Marlene, can you Marlene, get yourself we can't close hear you. We can barely hear you.
Oh my goodness.
I'm there so, you go. Oh,
okay. Sorry about that. Elizabeth, your Apples of Gold poetry book is...
Yes, it's on Audible. Apples of Gold is on Audible, and that has some poems in it. And I think we lost
Marlene.
But Apples of Gold, yes.
Oh, is that her hand? Did we lose her altogether? It just said her hand was lowered. Huh.
Apples of Gold is on Audible, and that has some poems in it. Yes.
No, she's still here.
Did you hear me?
Yes.
My cat is pulling on my cord.
Oh!
I'm getting out of the computer. Anyway. She's trying still to say here, though. Your Apple's old poetry is on Audible.
Yes, it is.
I have it. Thank you.
Okay, so this is Annie. So how many of your books are on Audible?
Three. Daddy Won't Let Mom Drive the Car.
Okay.
And Apples of Gold and The Bright Side of Darkness are on Audible.
Okay.
And Braided Love is going to be on Audible eventually. I don't know exactly when, but it's in the works.
Okay. Mm.
And I do listen to my books when I get my doubts going in, which I have sometimes. I put in my Audible book and say, hey, I can do this.
That is very nice.
So is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to touch upon before we start wrapping it up?
This is Alice, and I always like to ask each author to tell us about your cover and perhaps the back cover as well.
Well, the cover of this book shows a farmhouse, very nice, inviting farmhouse with a porch and a rail fence. And on the back cover is a red Corvette. And it has the text that you read at the beginning on the back cover. So it's kind of a contrast thing.
Hmm.
Brenda and Kathy.
Can you find those photos online? For the cover? You got them from online? Well, you paid for them?
No, I had a person design that cover.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if he got... I mean, he, I think, got the things online and then...
The images, right.
And then messed with them and put the font and the title and all that on there.
Yeah, he formatted everything and designed it. Yep.
You can get Shutterstock photographs,
right?
For about $10 a piece, which aren't they're beautiful photographs, but you really need a sighted person to you tell them what you're looking for, and they will find it, and then work with it to put it together for the cover.
And you have to be careful. And look and make sure that not too many people have used that cover already, because I know someone who got what he was really excited about as a cover, and then he found out that several other people on Amazon had already used that book cover. So you have to kind of...
Oh, yeah.
That's an excellent
just like with
point.
Choosing your title. Mm-hmm. You want to search your title, make sure it doesn't come up too often.
Well, and I should have... Even with Braided Love, it's not the first one that comes up on Amazon because there's a lot of I love my hair kind of, I love my braids kind of stuff. So it's... You have to be careful of a lot of things, and I didn't think that one through. Well, and even The Bright Side of Darkness, I get a lot of people that ask if that's biographical about my life as a blind person, and I have to say, no, that doesn't have anything to do with that.
Although, sometimes I think it's hard when you draw from what you know, it's the people you know and your family and friends and so forth that give you inspiration for a character, but then you've got to just warn your family, well, I used some of your characteristics here, but it's not you.
But it's
don't
not
worry
you.
About it.
Right. And people always want to see something in your books that they think is something
personal
about them that might not have
actually
much to do with
it.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's just, I think that's when you finally do get to the point where you're famous, you can do what Barbara Hinsky was talking about, where she auctioned off the main character's name, and the person who won the auction, she used her name in the book. But she's not anybody that, you know, so her five book thing about a young woman losing her vision and getting a guide dog and coping with blindness and all this stuff, Emily Main was actually just someone who paid the highest bid on an auction.
Oh, that's funny. I'm interested. I don't know who this author is. You'll have to tell me about her so I can check her out.
She's going to be on an ACB call tonight.
Oh,
yes.
Again.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Joe, Elizabeth, we're at the top of the hour, and I want to know if you'd be able to share your website again with our listeners.
Brightsideauthor.com. All one word, brightsideauthor.com.
Thank you. And thank you so much for coming and sharing with us everything about writing and all of the observations that you've had in life to help inspire your writing. And
well, thank you. This has been fun.
Yeah, it's been great. And now we're going to hear from Marilyn Smith, our president. She's going to give us a little bit of a piece of what Behind Her Eyes is like.
Thanks. I think a lot of people here are familiar with Behind Our Eyes. I can't talk. But I wanted to comment on her book first. Joe, I really like the idea of young adult books because it reminds us to be tolerant when we hear about teens in trouble. We see so much from the media that is negative. And it helps us not to be so judgmental and to realize that each family has its own challenges, and it's not just one person; it's the other people that surround them. And I also love stories set around horses, Western settings. But the book launch program has done so well for us. We have our classes. We have small group meetings and critiques, and you can visit our website, behindoureyes.com, and find a form to fill out if you want more information, and a link to join here if you're a writer with disability. And just as a matter of interest, our magazine, Magnets and Ladders, which is online, is in need of some more fiction pieces. So this, you know, t- ties right in with the presentation tonight. We don't get a lot of fiction, and the deadline for that is February 15th, and you can go to magnetsandladders.org and see the guidelines, and you don't have to be a member to submit if you're a writer with a disability. We have lots of traffic. Well, no, it's light traffic, but lots of interesting information and people sending up their work on our party line list, our email list, and people network through that. If you want to see an example of one of our conferences, just recently on January 7th, we had one where members of our group and another person took a poem, put it to rhythms with multiple backtracks, emphasizing and kind of chanting to get the stanzas impact in there, and the momentum just blew our minds. It was so good. And they told the history of how they got it all together. So that is on our special events page at behindoureyes.org. And we hope that anyone hearing this who wants more information or wants to be part of us will go to the website and take it from there, and we'll be glad to answer any questions. Thanks.
Okay. Well, good night, everybody. This has been wonderful. Thank you, Jo Elizabeth, so much for coming tonight, and good luck to you and all your sales. And everybody have a good evening.